Wrong password? Try again. Those four words will either send your customers grumbling to reset their credentials or cause them to abandon their session for good. Consumer giants like Best Buy and Amazon are solving this problem by eliminating passwords and giving their customers the easiest, most secure way to sign in and shop through passkeys. And Passage by 1Password makes it easy to deliver the same experience. Increase conversions and drive revenue by quickly implementing passkeys in your existing authentication flows with Passage by 1Password. Passkeys not only reduce the frustration passwords inflict on users, ensuring they continue to progress through their buying journey, but they also help you save your organization time and money by reducing support costs and the need for expensive SMS-based MFA. With Passage, you can confidently introduce an industry-leading Passage key experience that just works with a few lines of code. Our dedicated security experts handle passkey updates and ongoing maintenance, allowing you to focus on your core app, knowing users will enjoy a secure and frictionless login experience across all their devices. Check out Passage to learn more and talk with their team.
Welcome to the Product Ops Chronicles with myself, Graham Reed, and my co-host and Product Ops pal, Antonia Landy. Welcome back, Antonia.
It's lovely to be here once again.
Today, we are joined by Holly Holbrook, Senior Product Operations Manager at Nylas, who is no stranger to podcasts and webinars of late. Holly, over to you to introduce yourself.
Yes, I am so excited to be here. And lucky me, we actually have 2 days in a row of being with you, your faces. So that is fun. I am a senior operations manager, product team at Nylas. I'm currently sitting alone in that role as the first person to have done that role at this company. And as you can imagine, there has been lots of things to do, lots of problems to solve, and really just defining the role. And that has been such a fun challenge for me. I think that there's a lot of positives that comes from being on your own team, newly seating in this position, because there's just endless possibilities. And honestly, you can't go wrong with what we're working on at some point in time. So it has been super fun, and I am excited to chat through some of those problems and solutions I've come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to have you on. Just for context for people watching, we're recording this mid-April, and this week there's been a whole host of product ops focused podcasts that both Antonia and Holly have been on, of which I've then also been listening in the background as well. So we'll be probably sick of each other by the end of today, having seen each other so much.
Never.
Okay, so. So today we are going to dive into one of my personal favorite topics for product operations, about communication and transparency that comes with that. And Holly has been putting in the hours of late on a number of initiatives at Nylas on this topic. And so, in a slight shift from the way that we usually do these on Chronicles, I'd like to hand the mic over to Holly in the first instance to just walk us through and tell us a little bit more about what she's been working on. Over to you, Holly.
Ooh, exciting. I wish that I could say that I have this mastered. Transparency and communication. I wish that I could say it was done and it was perfect, but I don't think anybody really can they? I've never seen it be perfect or done evolving, you know. And something, I guess, to start, set the scene, I'll take you back to when I first started. So like I mentioned, I am the first product ops manager at Nylas. And prior to me, it just was kind of overlooked. It wasn't really something that anybody was specialized in or paying much attention to. The very first thing that I did once I took my seat in Nylas was I started interviewing my cross-functional members. I talked to the VP of marketing, the director of marketing, a marketing manager, like just every role that I could identify as being a stakeholder within product to the broader org handoff. And in doing so, I really was able to uncover a lot of problems. A few examples of that being, we don't have any idea what product's working on. We don't know how the roadmap is put together. We are not a part of the roadmap. We don't understand at what point something is going to affect our customers. We're learning things after they go live because our customers submitted bugs. And those are all kind of typical, I think, from when that role has kind of not existed. And so I was able to get a good idea of kind of where we were sitting with that, with the broader problems. And something that I realized at the very beginning that we needed to start working on, which has now taken 2 years and I can't imagine is going to stop anytime soon, is really like getting that transparency level into our products. Another thing that kind of went into that is at the same time as me starting, we had transitioned from a product or sales-led motion to a product-led motion. And those problems, I think, become a little bit more combative when that's happening, because our organization is used to sales driving those things. And so those shots are being made by sales. It's exciting. We got this new sale. Now we need to build it. But you have to, when you do make that transition, you have to have some sort of trust and cohesiveness with the product team and the greater org, or else they're just like, well, I don't know what's going on now. Like, they switched everything and I have no idea. Like, what do I sell? What do I talk about? How do I do this? And so that really did, I think, add an extra layer of complexity. And it made it just that much more important for us to act quickly on some of those things. I will say that there's been things that didn't work. Like, obviously, we started a long time ago. We quickly, like, were trying to put little pieces in place. Prior to this call, we were talking about Legos. Kind of my philosophy with operations. I think that you need to do one piece at a time. And a lot of the time, that one piece maybe doesn't make anything look better or make it sense that you're building this greater thing. But you have to have that in order to get to the finished piece. And so those pieces, we were very agile thinking, just like putting something in place, watching how it worked. And that was things like manually asking our engineers to say in an Excel document, this is what I'm working on. This is this percent finished. This is what I finished today. We didn't have anything in place to even just know what was our engineers working on. There was a time when we had like an engineer was just doing his thing and working his head off. And all of a sudden he was like, hey guys, I'm done with this thing. And we were like, what thing? What are you working on? Like, we don't even know. And it turned out that like we had stopped that project, but somehow nobody talked to him. He didn't know. And he was like so stoked that the thing was done. And we were like, well, we had no idea you were still working on it. All of us had forgotten about it. You were like going hard on getting this thing done. And we're so proud of it. And like, we're so sorry that this happened. So it wasn't just like product to the Grunder org. It was product and engineering not having a system in place where we as the product team can talk about things. And so something that like I obviously really wanted to do at the beginning was, oh, well, we need a roadmap. We need to visualize what we're working on, what we have planned, what are we doing? And even just that question was like, oh, like, we don't really know. And so I had to like, the idea of bringing roadmaps to our company had to take a back seat for a second, because we had to do the work on those, that first layer of how do we even just expose what we're working on so we have alignment in between product and engineering about what's happening, like current state, what's going on. And we recently at Nihilus just released our biggest launch that we've done, I think ever, like since the product was originally made. But we made the decision to rewrite every single one of our core APIs. So it was basically just a rewrite of our whole platform.
Wow.
That was huge. But when I started, I went to the PM that's been working on it for about 7 months at the time. And I was like, all right, tell me, what do we have done? What's the scope of this project? How much longer are we expecting? What's been done? What's in progress? What still needs to be done? And that was a hard question to answer. It wasn't a straightforward, this is what we're aiming for, or these are our, this is the scope of the project. It was just like, yeah, we're going to rewrite everything. It's like, well, what is everything? And so one of the first things that we really did was wrote it all out. Not only was it like, we didn't know if something was exactly done. And if it was said to be done, what does done mean? You know? And so it was, I mean, the product manager just sat and we line by line wrote each feature and each endpoint, each thing that we knew needed to be done. And for about 2 weeks, we floated that document around to engineers that maybe we didn't even know had connection with this project.
Mm-hmm.
We just was like, tell us, have you done this thing? Have you started? Did you finish? Like, what's the lay of the land? And eventually we did get some physical evidence of what was done, what we need to get done, and what was in progress. And so that was really like the first piece. It was the rawest brain dump of so many people's thoughts. And we had to parse it and figure out what this means. And from there, we didn't really want to go back on any progress that we had made. Like, documents go stale. Documents get lost. New ones are made. And so I really thought about, how might we expose this? How might we start to keep this in a place that is growing and continuously updated rather than just a one and done type thing? At the time, Jira Product Discovery was just recently coming out. Are you guys familiar with that feature? Yeah. I was super excited to use it because I use the whole Atlassian org. I'd say I'm a solid power user. And so when this feature became available in the beta phase, I was like, this is perfect. What we will do is we'll plug in this spreadsheet and then we can start to directly connect engineering tickets. So then we kind of start to get that other piece of, these are what we want to do. Let's connect active sprints. Let's connect active engineering tickets that we are working on in the day-to-day with these epics so we can keep our eye on that movement. So when they're done on this side, we know. And I know that like we set out to talk about communication and transparency, probably with the broader org, but that can't happen without these like in the weeds theme. And I think that that kind of is something that people do a little bit wrong, is they're like, yeah, let's just throw a roadmap. People are asking for a roadmap. Let's just throw it out there. And then it's like, but this is subject to change drastically. They're always subject to change, but there should be a variant level of like, we are confident to some degree, right? Or else they're useless. And people start making promises and getting excited and communicating in two different languages. Like, someone thinks that that's happening. The other's like, oh yeah, I kind of just threw that on there. I don't like that. And I think that there will always be some degree of filling it up because people have feature requests, people have things that maybe we know we're going to do next year or when we have bandwidth. So they just kind of sit on the roadmap. But in addition to roadmaps, release comms have been this huge thing. Making sure that people are updated when a change goes out, even just like a live change that will impact our customer's experience. That is huge to know. And I think is something that I wish I'm getting into starting to get better at here at Nihilus, but like doing that external comms, that change log of sorts. We're an API company, and any tweak to the APIs, you need to know of. If the payload changes, your system might break. If like whatever it is, it drastically changes that experience. And so it goes beyond just our company having an idea of what's going on, but our company is our advocate for, or like our internal internal customers is maybe what I'd call them, but like my coworkers, they are the advocates for our company, and our customers know what they know because we talked to them and we told them. And so transparency and communication, there is like so many layers to it. So I don't know. I feel like I just rambled on for so long about
it's very timely to give you a break as well, Holly, I think, actually, because I know there's a lot more that you can talk about, but, you know, have a break for a moment. There was so much there. And one of the pieces I'd love to come back to is you talked about very briefly about trust and providing and enhancing and building that trust between the differences. And personally, it's a word that I've used a lot over kind of the past kind of year or so. My last business, there was a complete breakdown of trust between the tech and the commercial teams through a lack of transparency, through a lack of good communication, you know, in a product-led business. But the business didn't know what product was building, what direction we were going in. It was very much a kind of a case, we'll build it, and then it's over to the rest of the team. We'll now go and sell the thing. Mm. You know, there was no trust that what we were building was the right thing, that it was solving the right problems, and more less than trust. But, you know, just being part of that conversation as well, you know, is just so important. So it was really interesting that you brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think even before that, right? Like just understanding what's happening. And I think like this idea of building blocks, right? First, you need to be solid within product and tech. Like the teams actually need to know what every other team is working on. But then going outside of that, and there really is that breakdown of trust, because if you're not communicating with your commercial teams, whether that's sales or whether that's customer success, customer support, you're preventing them from doing a good job, right? Mm-hmm. That's essentially what is happening. You're making their life actively more difficult because they might figure out new features in a demo. Like that is embarrassing, right? They might get bug reports of things they didn't even know were released. How will they be able to provide the service they most often want to provide, right? And I think that's really where that breakdown of trust starts happening, where it feels like we're not on the same team anymore. It feels very, very separate. It feels like, oh, they're just, you know, in the Wild West doing whatever they want to do without any concern for our targets, without any concern for what our working day actually looks like and what our customers expect from us.
Yeah, absolutely. And trust and empowerment are two words that really stick out to me. You can't sell something that you don't know about. Yeah. You can't build something that you have no vision about. Every area of a company is a very important role. And if we all work independently of each other in these silos of, well, this is what I think is going on, and this is my piece of the knowledge, it really becomes broken. That whole communication and trust ecosystem is no more. You don't have that environment where you can ask questions and feel like you are contributing to the bigger picture. And I think that's really important with successful teams is making sure that you understand the importance of perspective in every situation and every product that we have. It was International Women's, this is so random, but it makes sense, so let me get there. It was International Women's Month just last month, I think, in March. And something, I interviewed all of the women at Nihlis and did a little spotlight for them. And one of the questions that I asked them was, why is it important to have diversity within teams? And whether that's gender diversity or culture diversity, whatever it is, why is that important? And everybody was like, they obviously had a unique answer, but they all were within the same vein of different perspectives come with those different backgrounds, with those cells is going to give you a different idea of what the problem is than CS is going to give you, but they're all meaningful. And they all help bring you to a bigger discussion. And I think that one of the things that all of us on this call, plus everybody who listens, can understand and relate to is, what happens to my feature requests? I feel like I submit feature requests and nothing happens. I never hear back. That is a big thing for people. And I kind of went through this feeling of, why do they care so much? I just, like, don't they know that, like, if it's not on the roadmap, then it's like in our backlog. It's not like it disappears. It's that we're going to use it one day. It just doesn't make sense right now. But after really talking to I think that communication is one of the most underrated things. I had that feeling. I had that perspective because I just assumed that they were, I don't even know what I assumed, but I made this decision in my head of why they were pestering me, and that annoyed me until I talked to them and then really understood that they are just as passionate about the product and about our customers as I am. They just have a different avenue for it. They talk to our customers and need to be that advocate. So to them, that's how they do it. They submit feature requests. And that really changed the way that I viewed their feedback and that relationship. I don't sit there and talk to customers every day. My PMs don't sit there and talk to customers every day. That communication and transparency of what are our customers saying? How are we solving that or thinking about that internally? When do they need this? What does this do for them? Does this cost maybe us money? Does this make them have to put more effort on their side? All of those things matter in a company. And I wish that, like, there was more of a straight and narrow path or a mold that everybody fit in, but that's not the case. Everybody has different use cases. Everybody has different needs. And just having like a communication line or the right people and the right conversations drastically changes the perspective and the discussion into such a positive direction, whether that's like, how are we going to solve this problem, or just understanding each other better.
Yeah. There was a piece that we've all started to allude to here. We've spoken about sales led, we've talked about product led, and I find that those are terms, particularly product led, being overused and understood. Something like that. The essence of product led growth is that a lot of people assume it's like, well, products are going to go and build and then we're going to go and sell. That's not what it is. It's much more about, well, actually, the product itself is has got mechanisms to be able to sell without the input of salespeople. But that's that aside, for years, and when I was a product manager for well over a decade, you know, there was a lot of that time whereby the different teams felt themselves as those in those silos, you know, products and by extension to engineering. You know, we were the tech side of the business, and then over there somewhere was the sales, and over there somewhere was marketing, and over there was support, and they all did their own thing, and somehow we all seemed to get along, and there was lots of fights and things like that, but we got there in the end. And I just don't see that in modern business, in modern SaaS business, that being really the case anymore. I much more see it as we are genuinely all working together on this. We are all at top, you know, going in that same direction. You know, sales have a core focus. They have a core set of specialisms that nobody else in the business can do. And we focus on what they do best. Antonio, you said that earlier about equipping those people to do their best work. So we want the salespeople to have everything they need to sell. We want marketing to have everything they need to go and paint pretty pictures or whatever marketing does. and all the other teams as well. And similarly, we want them to be ingrained in what we're doing. We want them to understand that vision, be part of that vision, to help us craft that vision, rather than it just being, well, product, that's for you to craft the vision, and then we'll say whether we like it or not and things like that, rather than it back and forth. It's much more of a mesh. It's much more of a that big collaborative effort.
But I will say at this point, though, I think there is honestly also a little bit of elitism in this. I think there is a tendency for product folks to inherently assume nobody else has really thought about the problem the way they have. Nobody else can really formulate it. And in some cases, that is true, because really, truly starting with the problem and what you're wanting to achieve, it's a shift in mindset. And that is actually difficult. Mm-hmm. That is not our default state, right? So it's very easy when somebody in customer success proposes a feature, it's very easy to look at that and go, eh, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they're already talking about the solution. I'm not even going to look at that, right? Instead of actually opening ourselves up and saying, this is how we work in product. If you want to come to me with something, this is kind of the format I need it in, right? I need to make sure that it's not just your opinion, and that it is actually validated to a certain extent, so I can prioritize it against all the other things that are on my plate. But so often I hear people in product go, well, nobody else gets it, you know, like especially commercial teams.
I'm the owner.
Like, oh, they just come at me with solutions, right? But it's like, well, have you taught them how to come to you with problems? Have you told them how you prioritize? Have you exposed all the millions of things you're always considering, right? Or is it just easier to just go, well, I'm just not going to listen?
But isn't that interesting, that how that is the mirror of what you were saying earlier, Holly, and I've always, you know, believed as well, that we need to be equipping and in our communications be aware of the audience. So what we are telling the sales team in terms of the roadmap, in product updates and things like that, we need to be making sure we capture their imagination, absolutely, but also making sure we're aware of what do they need, what's the level of technicality that we can or should not include as part of that. Are there things that they basically don't really need or care about? You know, they don't need a long list of all the bugs that we've solved in most businesses, although ironically for your business, Holly, I would assume actually that's probably a fairly important part for most people.
It is, sometimes,
the nuances of different changes for the APIs and things like that. But you get my meaning, that we need to be making sure that we're aware of what it is that they need to be able to do, in exactly as Antonio's just rightly said, for the rest of the business to understand what is it that product and the engineering teams need? What is it that, how can you talk to us best? And what's the information that we need, rather than, you know, just either blurting everything out or in the olden days, just throwing it over the fence. Here, I've got this great idea. Yeah. It's your problem. Now go and solve it, product.
That's it's so relevant to me, this whole conversation, because I actually, just on Wednesday of this week, this is the second time I've done this, but every month I do, since I've started, every month I have this thing that we call a product forum, and the whole company is invited. And we choose a topic, like a relevant topic, whether that's a big new feature coming out and we want to use that time to do a little bit of enablement, or we just hashed out this roadmap for this feature or this product. Let's talk about it. Whatever it is, it's product related and it's something that is meaningful and educating others, or just explaining or getting in the right room to talk about something. Two times we have done the same-ish topic, and that has been the product development lifecycle, like the software development lifecycle. That is a foreign thing to people who are not in product and engineering. They don't necessarily understand what is our process. Why do we wait until this time to do these things? Why do we do this first? Why we do what we do? Because we have that cohesive order that we have kind of agreed upon with engineering. That looks different from company to company, from team to team even, but it has been so empowering to our grander org to talk about those different areas. And the one I specifically did yesterday or on Wednesday was I brought back up that product development lifecycle that we reference all the time. They are starting to see it often. They've gotten a full walkthrough of it. I specifically pointed out the points in the process where feature requests are important, why they're important, what they do for that piece. So we have discovery, we have initiation, we have execution and release. How does feature requests fit into each of those? Why are sometimes we put a feature into our backlog? This is when that will come back up. This is the process of utilizing feedback and getting customers, even just like we're doing a beta of a product. Who are customers who have already asked for this feature? Maybe those are our first users. Utilizing feature requests is different within every piece of the puzzle. And I know that. You guys know that. Lots of other people, they don't know that. And so taking 30 minutes to explain how we think about these problems, the steps that we take to solve them, looking at, well, this customer asked for this thing, but really they have an underlining problem that we can solve in this way. So it doesn't quite look like what they're asking for, but their problem is solved. That's how product looks at problems. And sometimes others don't think of it that way. I don't think like a salesperson. I couldn't do their job. I could not even fathom calling somebody and asking them to buy something. But like, I know how to communicate with customers and understand feature requests and figure out points within even ongoing products that maybe we could solve another problem. So I think that just like education and enabling people, empowering them to know what we are doing goes so much into that transparency, is because you can tell people, well, this is how we do it and this is how we do it. And no, but they're always going to come back and say, I don't get it. Why are you doing that? Why are you saying what you're saying? And I said this already, but I say it, I'll say it again. Communication is underrated. Getting in a room and talking about a problem or just exploring the problem space together is huge. And it will not only bring alignment, but it will also open the door for maybe an outside perspective. Maybe we are doing something wrong. We should be adaptable and we should be bringing in new ways, but we also should be educating people as to why what we're doing is that way.
Yeah. And I think, like you mentioned this earlier, right? Even the common understanding of how to use a certain artifact or how to use a specific piece of communication, especially you see this with roadmaps all of the time, right? Product very gingerly agrees to look at some things in a potential time frame, and somebody else in some other corner of the company might see that as a legally binding contract that will be delivered exactly as is at all times. And I think that's when it really becomes helpful to expose things like levels of confidence, right? Like today, knowing what we know, this is what we assume will happen, and we are X percent confident about this, right? 2 weeks from now, that might change, and now we're less confident than we were because we learned X, Y, Z, right? And really having these discussions out in the open, exposing all that nitty-gritty work that actually makes product work so difficult and so complex, so that other people can go, right, I understand, right? And they understand the value behind that. They understand the value behind doing discovery on something and then realizing it doesn't work, or it doesn't work the way we said it was going to work when we met for coffee in the kitchen, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, and really exposing all of those things, bringing them to the surface, because I think that's exactly why so many people outside of product and tech feel like it is such a black box. You throw something in, something happens, nobody knows what, and then sometimes something else comes out of it.
Yeah.
And I was just going to just add to that. My last business, you talked about the you know, the black box. Holly, my business called it the black hole. You know, and this was the one of the biggest areas of a loss of trust between the two halves of the business was, you know, feature requests were going in, and they called it the black hole of death. You know, the Jira project. Because nobody looked at it, and more importantly, nobody responded to this. Even if, and this was a big piece that I spent a long time working on when I was at Cobalt, was just making sure that we look at these things and we at least acknowledge that we have got them. And another piece as well is that look at this. Is this just generally sensible? Is this something that you think, yeah, we would actually consider doing this? And if it's not, tell the person mm-hmm. that submitted it. You know, in inverted commas, reject it, okay? And explain what that means. To say to them, look, we've looked at this. You submitted it a week ago, not 6 months ago. You looked at it over the past week, and look, it just doesn't feel like we're going to do this in the next 12 months or something like that. We'll keep it on file, absolutely, as you said. And I'm sure that doesn't go down well with some, people on LinkedIn, you know, to say that we keep things on a backlog. Most people want to get rid of backlogs. But thank you very much. And that makes such a difference to people that you have acknowledged, that you have read it. They know that you've looked at it. If you turn around to them and just go, it's just not going to work for us, it's just not what the company's doing right now, they go, okay, I can't argue with that. That's great. I might disagree with it. I might argue with you about it. We might have a discussion about it. But ultimately, that's great. We've had that discussion rather than, I have no idea what's happened. Are you working on it? Are you not working on it? Did you even see it? Are you even listening to me? What's the point of me bringing you any more feedback mm-hmm. if you're not going to acknowledge mm-hmm. or listen to it?
Yeah, and I think that just as important it is for somebody to acknowledge something for the sake of, we took the effort to submit this. What was the vibe when you got it? But also, I think as a PM, when you read that piece of feedback, it stays in your head. Like one day in the future, you're going to have a conversation and you're going to say, oh, hold on, I read something somewhere about this. This is what they said. And I remember because I took the time to read that. And that's where I think it's probably powerful. Like I would say, I want to keep every piece of feedback that I've ever gotten. I want to throw it in my backlog as an idea. I group things together. Like we have 10 feature requests that are all the same item. I think that it's so powerful to be able to come back. Like at this time, it didn't make sense, but I can see a case for it in the future. And just casual conversations, you'll be like, actually, we have customers asking for this thing. Maybe we are on the right track of this is something we should focus on. And then being able to go back and surface it. And I think that's really powerful for a product team. Whether that feature request is 4 years old. Like, that's still a valid piece of feedback. And yet, it's harder to come by feedback and good feedback that's actionable. I know that I'm kind of changing the topic, but I do want to touch on something that came up a little bit ago. Graham, you mentioned that, like, you don't feel like in current day SaaS companies, there's really much like silo, or like, I don't know what that team's doing, or I don't know what that team's doing. I will say one of the biggest challenges that we have been trying to overcome is the relationship between product marketing and product. I don't know if it's just like my industry or if this is like something that everybody is going through. I don't know, but we have a complex product. We are an API company. Like, some people don't even know what an API is, and it's hard because you can't really contextualize an API. You can't see it. You can't touch it. You can't. You have to have a predetermined idea of a problem you need solved, or an action you need to take care of, in order to put that concept together of, oh, your APIs will allow me to do this thing I want to do. That is hard in a marketing standpoint, because they rely on us communicating to them and educating them on the technical details of what this thing is, so they can talk to it about it to it and get other people to understand it. And that has been one of the relationships that has drastically changed with just having candor and conversation and transparency of exposing our day-to-day, getting them involved in maybe something that we think would be too technical for their consumption. There was times when we didn't even want them to look at our like Kanban board of what we were doing. But it turns out that is the most important tool for them. Like, this team uses it. They're power users of our like day-to-day work cues. And that is so, I didn't see that coming. I kind of think that that's like another layer of the transparency and stuff, is just exposing information and how we do things or artifacts that we're working on. We can't really decide what, like, I might interpret a piece of feedback or artifact in such a different way than Graham does. Maybe some, like, a Slack message conveys the meanings and the underline that I need, but it didn't make sense to somebody else. Everybody's like consumption ability is different, and things make sense to them in different views. And who are we to decide what is best for them? And so something that I really like to do is be transparent and expose these things. I'm not sure which one will be the most impactful for you, but if this one is over this one, you have access to the both of them. It has been such a weird journey, but when I first started, there was like so much miscommunication and kind of like just a constant headbutt. And that has changed. And so I don't know where it's going to go to next week, but I do think it's getting better. And it was solved in a way that I had no idea it would turn out to be, but it really opened my mind to, I don't know what's best for them. Let's ask them, what would be the best type of form, or is there a template that we can put into place to convey this complex idea to you? It's not that you guys aren't educated or don't know what this is. It's just that this is a feature that we're really close to, you're not, and we need to figure out the differences. And we came up with a direct template that should ish work for every product. Sometimes there won't be a need for one or two of the areas, but overall we decided this is what they want to see because we asked them, because they started to get exposed to our processes. They identified we could be beneficial at this stage rather than this stage. Bring us in with this type of information at this time. And that is sometimes overlooked, I think, is just making sure that like when makes most sense for you guys, because it might be different than when makes most sense for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, right? And Graham, I would love to hear your opinion on this, but honestly, in my experience, and I've almost exclusively worked in Berlin in several different companies, but product marketing is forgotten a lot of the time by PMs. It's honestly just like a completely separate entity that every so often knocks at your door, wants to know what you're doing. And as a PM, you go, well, why do you want to know that? Well, I don't know what the finished feature is going to look like. I can't tell you yet, right? But like, talk to them about the problem you're solving. And there is kind of tension there because they need to know ahead of time, right? They need to plan campaigns. They need to create assets. And sometimes we are putting them in incredibly difficult situations. And I think it's really this, and this is why to me, product ops is really just doing product management internally, right? They are your customer in this particular instance, right? Discover what they need, discover how they work, discover where they could even provide value to you, right? It's not just a one-way street.
I've had different experiences with marketing and product marketing. Actually, it was only my last business at Cobalt that I had an actual defined product marketing team. And actually, they were pretty good, I will admit. They were very, very good at kind of being well involved. They were tightly ingrained into products for a period of time. They reported to the CPO as well before there was lots of movement about. But more widely, marketing as a whole, very interesting. And you're absolutely right there that marketing's timelines are often very, very different to what product. You know, stereotypically, product doesn't like releasing any information until literally the last minute, like a second before they're going to hit the publish button. And quite often they don't know or they don't want to explain about, you know, what's coming, when is it coming, all of these, you know, very date related things. But the reality is other parts of the business, and marketing in particular, they need that because they need to plan a campaign. It comes back to, you know, this argument about kind of whether you have dates on a roadmap or things like that. I'm very middle ground with that. Yes, you don't have a specific date, but you've got to give them a rough idea, even if it's in months or quarters. But the reality is that's great from a non-committal perspective, from a resource perspective, but your customers, whether it be B2B, B2C, whatever, they need to know that. They want to know that. If Microsoft went out and said, yeah, well, we're going to release the next version of, you know, Windows, it might be next year, it might be 5 years' time. Brilliant. What am I supposed to do with that piece of information? Should I?
Right.
Should I build that? Should I take that? And that's the thing, is other departments, other parts of the business need that sort of information so that they can plan their campaigns, they can plan engagements, they can plan customers, they can plan pilots, they can plan all of these other bits and pieces. And I think that's where it is very important to work very closely with them. You might not be able to give them the exact information, but provide them with what you can. Work together on this. Come to the compromises. Give them an idea. And product marketing, I think, is a great intermediary. You know, product marketing, in the most part, is only about a decade old sort of thing. You know, back in the day, we didn't have these things. It was all on product to do. Very similar story to product operations as well. And so we've now got people that are great specialists that bridge that gap between being fairly technical. They understand, they are really ingrained into how things work, and also the vision, the you know, really what is that North Star, what we're really trying to do and sell here. and then have that marketing head on as well. You know, how do we then turn that into a great story, into a great message? I'm hugely supportive of them as a function, and do what we can to support them.
I agree totally. I think that product marketing is a game changer for getting users into our products. There once
right.
time when product managers had to figure out how to talk to our customers and make it intriguing enough for them to give us money. And I think that this might be I don't know, I'm curious to hear if you guys have seen this before, but we recently changed the way that we do releases. And let me explain that to you, Graham. I believe that you and I have talked about this before, so bear with me. But we found that it's hard, it's straining on product marketing when you are working towards a date and they're like, on this day, we're going to release this feature. And so on that same day, we are going to do a marketing launch. We're going to splash this. It's going to be so exciting. But everybody knows that things change. We had too many bugs that we couldn't quite get done, or this feature isn't quite right. We're not ready yet. Or we are not ready at all. Like it varies on different things, but there are lots of opportunities for that date slip. And it was causing a lot of strain on our product marketing team when it did, because they're like, one specific thing I mentioned that we recently did a huge release. They wanted to do an in-person event for the go-to-market of it. They wanted to invite our biggest customers that we were wanting to get migrated sooner. That was not possible because our timeline kept moving. And so how do you plan on getting everybody into a physical room if you don't even know if the product's going to be done yet? It's hard to plan. It's hard to get ready for. And we took an interesting approach. Maybe this is interesting. Maybe it's not. I'd love for you guys to tell me if you've seen this before. But we now have separated them. We have one release, which is the product readiness. What that means is like the product is going to be ready by this date. Yeah. All of our bugs are going to be completed. Quality assurance is going to be passing and done. All the features are there. Everything is done. Docs are written. Everything is done. Then a month, maybe more, is the marketing date. Because in that time frame, we are accounting for slippage. We are accounting for user internal testing, internal enablement, alignment on what we accomplished. It gives us that buffer time of getting more confident in it. So rather than product marketing getting annoyed that we're pushing it, we have now given ourselves time to be more powerful and more communicative within that phase. And that has seemed to work really well with us. So that actually has kind of evolved even a little bit further now, where we now look at quarters and we say, these are all the things that I think we're going to get done in this quarter. Product marketing has direct insight into the status of those things. So they see like, these four things are done. These three things are about to be done. These things haven't even started. Nobody's even touching that yet. So like, I'm not even going to think about that. They now have this alignment that happened very naturally when we started separating those dates. We work in a quarter. And as that quarter goes, we're getting things done. They're acknowledging that. They're getting ready to talk about that. They're starting to plan a bundled release. They're like, we can put these things together. We can talk about these things. And then in the corresponding quarter, so the following quarter, we know this is all the shit we got done. It's not even a question to, are we going to get it done? It's just, this is what we got done in quarter one. Let's start talking about it in quarter two. That can start the next week. That can start the next month. We can do four of them. on that set that has been done. It's not like it's in flex. It's not like it's a maybe. We worked, we got it done, we got it ready. Let's talk about it. That has really changed the way that we communicate and plan. And we've seen a lot of success with that. So I'm curious, have you guys seen something like that before?
Seen, no, but I think it makes a lot of sense, right? Because it also gives product and tech the confidence, right, that you have shipped a stable product. Because even if you do make that release date, like, stuff can still go very, very wrong as soon as you turn it on, even if it's just for internal customers, right? Even if it's just for a couple of pilot or beta customers. And having that sort of delayed reaction almost, it works really beautifully two ways, I guess. You get that confidence that what you have built actually works. And like you say, you give product marketing the opportunity to bundle things and actually tell an even stronger story. So I really like that.
I think that it's interesting because I've got two thoughts to this. I think I think that is an incredibly positive culture. And there's so much, and this is a great point for us to then finish on, is talking about culture, but this is a great culture piece. Very positive thing to aim for, I think, in business, in SaaS business, to be able to kind of say, look, give us the space to do this properly and finish it and test it and make sure it's all good. And then we've got and give us that buffer to be able to look at slippage, look at problems that we face, give us that space to then be very confident to essentially hand it over to you guys and then market it and sell it and do whatever you want to it. And if you've got those, for the parts of the business that really do rely upon fixed dates for posts, for social media, for newsletters, for in-person events and things like that, those things are just necessary. So actually, if there is before that the possible of slippage and dates and things like that, well, give us the buffer. I think it's a great thing to aim for. I think it stands up as a shining example of what businesses should aim for. But the counterpoint to that is I just know so many businesses that are just like, well, we've sold on the basis that we need to have that. And so they're always working to get it out as quickly as possible because they've sold it, because they need to move on to the next thing. They need to prove things to the marketplace, to the board, the C-suite. They're waiting for all of this stuff to be done. Most businesses are, in some way, form or another, probably slightly behind where they want to be, so that we're always playing catch up. And I think that's a big problem. And I think that's a problem. It's not, and it's certainly something the product operations as well too can help with, and product teams, can be supported with. But I think it comes back down to culture. And what you've talked about there is kind of shifting that culture to be, one where the business really all works together on that. Because again, for that to work, what you've proposed, what you suggest there, Holly, which is, I think, fantastic, really does need everyone singing, the same tune, for everybody to be understanding, for there to not be kind of this, can we get it out any quicker? Because, this we've sold it and this customer won't sign the deal if we don't have it out on this time. As soon as you start having those sorts of conversations, that thing doesn't work. And so having and building that culture over a period of time, then makes it so much better and easier to do those sorts of things. And I'm conscious of the time, and so I'd really like to kind of just finish on that piece about culture and how important that is to be able to do a lot of what product operations does, not just kind of in this area. Well, transparency and communications is probably one of the biggest cornerstones of it. But what are your thoughts on kind of that culture and improving and changing to, for everybody to be working better together?
I think that culture is the most important piece of a cohesive process. And we need to trust each other. And I think that one of the things that helped me when I started this whole process with my company is I came in with the perspective and the intention of, I am working on these things. like I'm working on this type of layer, not on the product level, like the actual in the weed products. I'm in those calls and but I am focused on here. I want to make, like when I'm talking to in kind of my discovery calls and I'm talking to product marketing and I'm getting an idea of where things are, I made it very clear that I am here to help communication, to help change the culture, and that like the flow of how things are moving in and out of each of us. And that was such a game changer when I started to make these changes. I had champions internally. Like they were excited that I was there. They wanted me to make that difference that I set out to do. And that really gave them the opportunity and like the mindset of, I'm going to talk to Holly. I'm going to tell her my feedback. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to help drive this direction because we are all going in the same direction. That's where we want to be. And so obviously like what I just explained with those releases was not an instant thing. Sure. It took a lot of iteration and it took us rebuilding relationships and speaking the same language. And now we can sing that same language, you know? And I think that that's really important and needs to be remembered, is you can't just change it overnight. You have to put in those work, that work of the little pieces, but at some point it's going to start shaping a bigger thing. Maybe it's flowers, maybe it's a Pikachu, I don't know, but those Lego blocks one day are going to turn into something. And being patient and having that like mentality of, let's try this thing. Let's see if it works. Let's talk about how it didn't work or how might we do it differently. It takes time, but I think once you have that like trust in each other, it's game changing.
Yeah, I think honestly for me, culture is what you do, right? And especially when it comes to communication and transparency, this needs to be role modeled by senior leaders. You need to acknowledge that if something is important, you give people the time to do it, right? If you say documentation is important, but then you keep hounding people about deadlines, you will never get to a culture of good documentation, right? So role modeling, really giving people the space and the time to do the things that you say are important. And it's a super gradual shift, just like you say, Holly. This is not going to happen overnight. You can't suddenly go from A to B and expect everybody to toe the line or to even understand why you decided to go for B and not H, for example. But it's one of the biggest parts, right? Becoming more transparent, becoming more communicative. It's something you will struggle with. It's something you need to get better at, right? A lot of us aren't naturally gifted communicators, and I think that's also something we need to consider. But at the end of the day, it's only gonna become a meaningful part of your org if you deliberately make it one.
Intention.
Hear, hear. Yes. Fantastic. Well, that's a absolutely brilliant point and conclusion, I think, for us to finish on for today. So I just want to say thank you to my co-host Antonia, and especially to our guest today, Holly. Please do connect with any of us on LinkedIn. Thank you too to the Product Led Alliance for hosting and facilitating this continuing podcast series, and to everybody watching as well today. We hope you took some away from this, found it useful, and we will see you again on the next episode of Product Operations Chronicles. Thank you.
Thank you.